On to our next case, which is Butler versus Village of Round Lake Police Department. Mr. Dennis? Mr. Dennis, where are you?
Good morning, Your Honor. Marty Dennis on behalf of Mr. Butler. This is an Americans with Disabilities Act claim, and it was federal court jurisdiction. Mr. Butler requested accommodations under the Americans with Disabilities Act, which I will refer to as the ADA for shortness purposes. He worked between December 2003 and May 2004 asking for various accommodations. The village's response was that they would not allow him to work. They sent him to their doctor, and in September of 2004, who released him to come back to work. And then at a February 2005 hearing, there was a pension hearing in which he was granted a disability pension. The lower court on summary judgment granted summary judgment based on the application of the judicial estoppel doctrine. The relief that we request is that there were disputed issues of fact regarding what his testimony was, and that should be reversed and sent back to for trial. Now, I only want to make four points.
But you said disputed. Didn't he testify that he had totally disabled?
No, there was no testimony that he was totally disabled. The court did find that he was totally disabled, but there's no testimony that he was totally disabled.
But he said he couldn't do the job.
The job wasn't, Your Honor, the job wasn't defined. Under the ADA, the question is, what are the essential functions of the job? That depends on a number of factors. What does the job description provide? There was nothing in the job description about what he was describing. How frequently is it done? If you look at page 5, note 3 of our reply brief, there are at least 6 or 7 different factors under the EOC guidelines as to what constitutes essential functions of the job. Now, even assuming that the court was correct in its holding that he could not no longer perform the duties expected of a police officer as of February 2005, then arguably his damages would be cut off at that point in time. He wouldn't be able to receive back pay beyond February of 2005. But that gets into my second point, is the pertinent question which the court didn't answer is, what did his testimony pertain to? Did his testimony pertain to what he was testifying in February of 2005, or did it encompass the prior acts and conduct by him and what he was doing when he was actually working between December of 2003 and May of 2004, and when he was asking for accommodations through September of 2004? And four. And there's at least 4 different disputed fact issues that the court shouldn't have resolved. Number one is, he was actually working. He was working during at least that 5 or 6 month period, and that's inconsistent with some kind of testimony that he wasn't able to do the job.
He had the pulmonary disease at some point. When was this pulmonary COPD diagnosed?
I believe that was in May of 2004, Your Honor. He had been treated by Dr. Lynn for at least 3, 4, 5, or 6 years before that.
Okay, and then there's another question here. This fellow, I guess he's a Lieutenant Molitor?
Molitor, yes, Your Honor.
Yeah, you got it in your brief, where supposedly he recommended Butler be assigned to day shift, because Butler was running the field training office.
Yes, Your Honor.
And which occurred on days, or alternatively assigned to a different job of an SRO, which is something about
school resource officer.
Yeah, which was completely different than being a street cop, isn't it?
Yes. He applied for different. Lieutenant Molitor recommended various accommodations. The village said no, no, no. He applied for reassignments under the ADA are well-recognized assignment alternative accommodations under the case of EOC versus Sears, under the case of Giles versus United Airlines. The obligation of the village, the employer, was to engage in an interactive process.
Were these jobs open?
Pardon?
Were these
there were vacancies, Your Honor. He applied and asked for jobs, school resource officer, community resource officer. He has to go to investigations. He has to be a detective. He said, I'll give up my sergeant stripes. I'll take a demotion. This man wanted to work. He was asking for accommodations. During the same period, the court is saying that he couldn't, that somehow his testimony precluded liability during that earlier period of time. And again, the fact that he was working is inconsistent with the court's decision that he was totally disabled during that earlier period of time. Okay, Dr. Allegretti on September 13th, 2004.
Well, that isn't true. There are people who work with total disabilities.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
There are people who work with total disabilities.
Yes, I think
so. Look, didn't he get a pension on the basis of his testimony that he was totally disabled?
No,
wasn't it a pension for being totally disabled?
No.
Can you get a pension for not being totally disabled?
No, the standard was different.
If you what
look
was
at
it?
The standard was any incapacity involving any assignment involving any police services. I believe that's page 12 of Appley's brief. The standard was different. The standard for the pension hearing did not consider accommodations. It did not consider essential functions. Essential functions, again, and accommodations are key aspects of the ADA analysis.
Were they? Was the pension, what is it, a board?
Pension, yes,
board,
it was a pension board.
Were they considering, we'll call it the street cop, the person that got to work at night, that has to wrestle, as they put it, that has
I'm
to handcuff
sure what
people?
The pension hearing was considered. There was different testimony about being a street cop, a police officer, a sergeant, a police officer. Again, to take that testimony, and as Judge Mannion in a case called Titan Commonwealth Insurance back in 2004 said, this is a very harsh doctrine. You don't apply this doctrine unless it's clearly inconsistent. The court below didn't apply the clearly inconsistent doctrine, didn't say these were the same facts, identical facts.
Wait. Do you have to be totally disabled to get this pension? What is the?
I don't believe so.
What does that mean? You get 100% pension for 10% disability, or what?
I don't know the answer to
well,
that.
Well, that's kind of important, isn't it? I mean, you say that the standards are different, but you don't know what the standards are.
Well, the standard is set forth on page 12 of the brief as to what.
Yes, I know. I'm looking at that, and I'm asking you a question.
Okay.
What do you have to show? Do you get partial disability or total?
Partial, as I understand. Well,
why don't you find out, for goodness sake?
The definition is any
look, this pension. Issue must arise every day when someone asks for a pension. Does he get the full pension if he's partially disabled, or does he get a partial pension? Or do you just get a pension if you're totally disabled?
I don't know the answer to that, Your Honor.
Well, what if it's the law in Illinois that you only get this pension if you're totally disabled? You're incapable of which is, I think, what the language suggests. You're just incapable of doing any police work that they could assign you.
Question.
Then you'd have a very serious problem.
Question.
So I don't know why you haven't looked into it, to find out exactly what Illinois law is.
Again, I don't know.
Must be cases. Must be cases. Aren't there cases dealing with this? You didn't look.
I didn't look, Your Honor. I don't know anything about Illinois pension law.
Well, that's ridiculous. It's key to the judicial estoppel argument to know what Illinois law is.
I believe the standard is set forth, as they say it, any incapacity in any assignment in any police services.
But that's ambiguous, because that means that if he can't do any single duty, or he can't do any of the duties, right? That's the critical ambiguity.
Don't agree. I want to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal, Your Honor. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Matthews?
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court. My name is Gregory S. Matthews. I represent the appellee, Village of Round Lake, incorrectly sued as Village of Round Lake Police Department.
How big is the Village of Round Lake?
Its population is around 8,000.
How many officers?
There, at the time this took place, I believe the testimony is that there were 40 total sworn officers within the department.
40?
Yes.
Well, boy, that's
for a city of eight, for a town of 8,000, that's huge. Isn't it?
Do you have a lot of crime in Round Lake?
Well, that's a factor, though, because the question is with, with my question here is about what is Molitor making suggestions for what seemed to be something other than jobs that require the exertion and walking and everything else. It looks like a couple of these are basically some public relation jobs or something.
Well, and they are. A school resource officer is an officer who, as the words imply, works in the school, but the school resource officer actually has to perform the same functions as a police officer and may get called to duty in a different location.
So if that's a requirement, everybody has to be able to perform as a street cop, even though that may not be their primary job.
Yes.
Because that's pretty important here. But otherwise, he's saying that this reasonable accommodation thing wasn't considered at the pension hearing, comparing it to Social Security disability.
Well, and I think that's the interesting thing about this case as compared to all of the cases that have been set forth in the briefs for the court to consider. This is a case, contrary to those, it's unique. We've actually have a case with evidence of a party who goes before an adjudicative body, must present evidence in an evidentiary hearing in which the local government body, the police pension board, considers the evidence and makes a determination, does this applicant receive a pension or not? All of the other cases, I believe, that we've had to consider here really deal more with the circumstance of a more traditional disability request, a Social Security disability request. And the cases are really limited in terms of how they relate the facts that the plaintiffs in those cases, what the plaintiffs really have said. Mostly based on forms or applications. Here we actually have both an individual who goes before the pension board, with an attorney representing his interests, presents facts and evidence through stipulated physician reports indicating that the plaintiff cannot perform the essential functions of his job. And then, given the opportunity to testify about those things, he offers sworn testimony under questioning in which he says he cannot perform the functions.
So did he get a full pension, or how does it work? What is a disability pension?
Two types of disability pensions that he could apply for: a duty-related disability pension, which would be a full pension, 100%.
If he were injured or something on the job,
In this case, the pension that was awarded was a non-duty pension. It's still a full pension. It's just the percentages change because it's
not. Right. So it's not that he gets, you know, the way they have for the military, they have these like you're 10% disabled and you get a small pension.
It has no bearing on the level of your disability. You must show that you are disabled from performing your job. And it wouldn't make sense otherwise. If the plaintiff here, he had the chance during that hearing to say, you know, folks, if you would just do this for me, I could do my job duties. But he chose to get the money. He chose to say that he was fully disabled.
That's at the pension hearing.
Yes.
Because he's trying to say that that's different than if he had an opportunity to press forward with this case to show that there were alternates, reasonable accommodations that they could have made and just shoved him out and didn't do that.
He would still have to show that even with reasonable accommodations, he could perform the functions of his job.
Of a job that they seem to be arguing is much less than the street cop.
Well,
and you're saying that they've got to be able, I'm using that term just because they do. The street cop demands everyone has to be capable of meeting those, even though they may be doing something else.
Well, yes.
All the 40, whatever it is, on force.
Yes, and the essential functions in this case, the only relevant essential functions are the physical functions of as you've seen.
Does that mean all 40 of these police officers have to be available for
on call at any time?
Does the police department have other employees who are not police officers?
Well, it
secretaries or what?
It does.
But He wasn't asking for that.
No.
To be moved into a, like sometimes with pilots, if they become, if they're no longer able to fly, they often get a desk job in the airline. But you don't have that situation.
Well, in what amounts to a limited police force in a limited town. There are jobs available. I mean, if you went online right, this is outside the record, but if you went online right now, you would find there are no jobs available in Round Lake of any kind in any department, public works, administrative, whatever it might be. People have their functions, and people fill those functions, but the essential aspect of this case is he couldn't do his job that he wanted to have reasonably accommodated.
Well, police officers are specifically trained to be a police officer for all the things you describe. I assume he wasn't looking for a job as being a clerk or something.
There is no evidence that the plaintiff in this case applied to do any other type of a job.
But he was offered, at least according to Molitor, there was some suggestion that he could do police officer jobs that we describe here, which, other than being called up, are kind of less challenging, we'll say.
Lieutenant Molitor testified that he and the plaintiff discussed various options, and the chief, who was the decision maker, made the decision that none of those options were available to him.
Because you're not supposed to create a new job if there's not a vacancy.
Well, there's no obligation to create a new job. Plus,
no, but apparently the chief said there's no vacancy. Or did he say, no, he's not capable of doing, even though that job's vacant?
The chief, there is no evidence in the record that says that Chief Foy concluded that Mr. Butler couldn't do a clerking job or anything of that nature.
That's why he wants to go back and have more than a summary judgment, I guess.
Well, again, going back to the root of it, the plaintiff testified in order in the pension hearing in a quasi-judicial process that he was not capable of performing the functions of his job with or without accommodation. If that's an accommodation, I would submit that he's a stop from attempting to go there because he is, to be a qualified individual under the ADA, you have to be able to perform the functions of your job, the one you have. Now, remember, there's no obligation of an employer to allow an allegedly disabled individual to move to a different job when the function that he performs, which in this case was the supervisor of the night shift, that would have to be filled. And the employer does not have that obligation in this circumstance because Mr. Butler was not a qualified individual. He could not perform his job functions.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anything further? No. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Matthews. Mr. Dennis?
Again, the key point is this, as Your Honor has recognized, is this ADA standard is with accommodations, okay, with or without accommodations. It's not correct and it's incorrect that accommodations were at issue in the pension hearing. There's no testimony about that. The process doesn't allow for that. There was no testimony. Under the Cleveland case, Cleveland recognizes that where the form, the pension hearing, does not consider accommodation issues, that can be a sufficient explanation under Cleveland to explain any apparent inconsistency. We made that explanation. The court refused to recognize it. My final point is if the court is going to apply this judicial estoppel doctrine, which Judge Mannion has recognized as a very harsh doctrine.
That's Evans, I'm Mannion.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Your Honor.
When we get old, we all look alike.
Okay. I'm sorry. Judge Mannion, I'm sorry. I apologize. The court has to do equity. And if the court looks at the equity of the situation, as the man was asking to work, he was asking for accommodations. He asked over a 9-10 month period of time. Their own doctor said he can go back to full duty. They refused to put him back to work. When he asked for accommodations, which is the ADA standard, they said no. They didn't go into a dialogue. There's no evidence in the record that there's some kind of dialogue or testimony on that. There is Lieutenant Molitor's recommendation. I got 1 minute. Okay. And then on top of that is they refused to engage in the interactive process, which this court recognizes in EEOC versus Sears, again, in the Giles versus United Airlines. They had no conversation. The conversation might have been in their mind, but they didn't talk to him. They didn't try to resolve the issue. The extent is that they didn't have clean hands. And if this court is going to do equity, and if it's going to cut off his claims going backwards in time, and again, the testimony is disputed issues of fact, then it needs to weigh those issues.
Before you go, are you just looking to say, well, maybe sometime at some point before 2005, when he went before the board, the pension board, he has some back pay coming or something? Or
yes,
what is
Your Honor, there would be liability at least before September 13, 2004, when their own doctor said he can go back to work. There would be liability during that period of time, and there would be back pay, and there would also be compensatory and punitive damages under the ADA. for that period of time.
And in order to reach that, you say you have to remand for the further hearing? Is that what you're looking for?
Remanding to, I believe there are factual issues at summary judgment that require a trial.
Okay, well, thank you very much to both counsel. Next case for argument.